WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is our 25th anniversary. The cupcake out in front, the fireworks should tell you. It's all brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness. Had a great conversation with Wendy Bronfine this week about cannabis and cannabinoids and terpenes and all sorts of educational stuff. We are going to have an educational series around here. Curio is sponsoring our 25th anniversary. And if you haven't found some of the pictures and some of the old school stuff, we're counting down our 25 stories of glory. Time will not dim the glory of your deeds. And of course, this week will be purple live shows and barn memories, as well as our community and charity work that we've done here that some people have forgotten about, but I haven't forgotten about it. We have pictures and evidence, so we'll be doing that the next couple of weeks. We're going to be at Coco's on Thursday celebrating the Maryland Crab Cake Tour from 2 until 5. Everybody said, Coco's, they got a great crab cake. Yeah, they got great coconut shrimp, too, and they got great burgers, great margaritas as well. We'll be giving away the Raven scratch-offs. Last time I had the Maryland Lottery scratch-offs at Coco's, we had a $100 winner at Coco's, maybe again on Thursday. Good luck down in Lauraville. We'll be there from 2 until 5. My buddy Rasig, who lives in the neighborhood, is going to stop by for a playoff edition. Playoffs for baseball, as well as John Morgan, who wrote a book, a longtime Baltimore Sun business and sports reporter, who wrote a book on the Ravens Stadium being open back in the late 90s. He is in town from Bloomberg. He's going to stop by for a crab cake as well. It's also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Make sure you're taking care of them. Certainly the windows need to be shut on these cold mornings. Very big appreciation for Window Nation taking care of me and my family last year. They can take care of you. 866-90-NATION. And Jiffy Lube, they're right around the corner. You hear them during Oriole games. Jiffy Lube now sponsoring us here for the next couple of months of football season and our 25th anniversary as well. Luke Jones joins us after double duty on Sunday. I had triple duty because I did kicks. Quadruple duty, if you count Child's Play, being a Dundalk guy with John Allen. And I have so many friends. I mean, Luke, Thursday night, Oriole game. Friday night, Oriole game, Adam Jones, nobody hits the ball. Saturday, Grayson Rodriguez, we come back. And then Sunday, this incredible remote control day where you kind of wanted to be at the ballpark for clinchmas, but you knew you needed to watch the Ravens game. I wanted to be in Cincinnati because it's what I do, and Chad Steele won't let me. So I stayed at home and went to see kicks, and I had the game on remote control back and forth. I forgot that the red zone even existed. I had to say to my wife, literally in the car on the way back from kicks at 11 o'clock at night, who won the 4 o'clock games? Who even played? I don't even know. I mean, what a day, what a weekend. And Sunday, a lot about baseball, but on the football side, this win in Cincinnati really puts them in the basement. It puts the Ravens in the catbird seat as they're trying to get healthier. And we talk a lot about Lamar. We talked a lot about ball distribution and Todd Monken. Hey, defense played okay too. And Clowney, for all the signings, I mean, Doomerville and Justin Houston and whatever Ozzy was doing and now Eric does to go and get that gray beard pass rusher from somewhere to come in. Clowney, 2 weeks into this, looks like maybe the best of the pack.
Oh, I'm not ready to put him in Elvis. Elvis Doomerville had a heck of a run for the Ravens. So far, so good. No question about it. He's played a lot. He had to play a lot on Sunday, but with Owe going out, and he's been disruptive in the pocket. There's no question about that. Now, the sack that he had on Sunday, if you go back and look, that was a coverage sack, and I think it really speaks to how well they played on the back end. When you consider no Marlon Humphrey, when you consider no Marcus Williams, and I get it. I mean, the Bengals eventually, you know, they score a couple touchdowns in the second half, but when you look at how the Ravens came out and played defensively, three and out. Cincinnati finally gets a field goal in the second quarter, but they had to drive, 6 minutes, 14 seconds to do it. And they were able to hold them to three. And even their touchdown drives, especially that one in the third quarter, I mean, yeah, they had to possess the ball again over 6 minutes. They had to convert third down after third down after third down. And you can look at that one or two ways. You can say, one, Ravens couldn't get off the field in those situations. And that's fair. I'm not going to say that, you know, this was a 2000-esque Ravens defensive performance, but considering the injuries that they had, considering even at 0-2, I think we all still acknowledge the Bengals are very talented on the offensive side of the football, even if they're certainly not firing on all cylinders. They made life very difficult. They sat back in two high defensive looks. They pressed on the outside with their corners, which I was surprised to see, given the fact that you don't have Humphrey there and you have these questions about Rock Ya-Sin and Ronald Darby and Brandon Stevens, but they played very well. And when you, again, the final score is a little deceiving considering seven of those points came on the punt return for the touchdown, which is a special teams issue, not a defensive issue. You have to be really pleased with how Mike McDonald's defense played. And this is a continuation of what we saw against the Bengals last year, albeit those, you know, a couple defeats, but we have seen like a Mike McDonald defense give Joe Burrow more trouble than he has against just about anyone, making life difficult for him in this Bengals offense that is all about wanting to throw the ball down the field and make big plays and score quickly. And we saw them do that against Wink Martindale's defense a couple years ago. I'll point out the Ravens were very injured that year too. So I don't want to pick on Martindale too much there, but it has been a different approach. They have forced Joe Burrow to check down and to throw underneath and settle for those types of throws. He's gotten the ball out quickly. So that has, it's not as though the Ravens have gotten after him and gotten a ton of pressure on him. You know, they had one sack on Sunday. Again, it was a coverage sack. It was Jadeveon Clowney, who I agree with you, played well. I'm not disagreeing with you. But it's just, you know, it's a philosophy that the Ravens have taken against Burrow specifically in this Bengals offense, and it's worked pretty well. Now, you need your offense to play well in turn, you know, which they didn't get enough of that late last year. And that's why they dropped the last two games in Cincinnati in week 18 in the wild card round. And no Lamar Jackson, of course, but their defense has come to play and they've given the Bengals fits, you know, going back to last year. So it was, considering the circumstances, considering some of the questions we had in general about this defense, and certainly considering the injuries they had in the secondary, you have to be very pleased with how Mike McDonald's group played. And as I said in our previous piece talking about the offense, I think it was a Ravens performance that, special teams aside, they complemented, you know, both sides of the ball complemented each other very, very well. And it's a reason why the Ravens are now 2-0.
Kyle Hamilton and the safety position and Marcus Williams, and the safety position is a very sliding scale here because sometimes it's a corner, sometimes it's a slot, sometimes it's more of a linebacker. I mean, a total hybrid look on the defensive side. The drafting of him deftly in, you know, and we talk about all these wide receivers they picked up. They drafted a center in the first round. But when they picked him and they spent all the money on Williams, I think we were all sort of scratching our head a little bit and knowing you can never have enough deep depth in the secondary. But now without Humphrey and without Williams, he's their best player on the backside, and it's happened kind of quickly. And they really ask him to do a lot.
Well, he moves around a lot. You know, without having a chance to rewatch the game and really seeing how much he moved around, I mean, just going off of week one, going off of what we saw last year, I mean, they ask him to do a lot. He's the kind of player who can blitz. He can play the nickel. We saw him play the nickel almost exclusively the second half of last season. But now with Chuck Clark gone, now with Marcus Williams, you know, which Marcus Williams is replaced by Geno Stone, and we'll get to him in a moment. But, you know, they do ask Hamilton to move around and wear different hats, so to speak, in this offense and or in this defense. And he's someone who, you know, has, after a slow start in his rookie year, I think he's been up to the task. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes, you know, week to week with what they ask him to do and what it means for their, you know, their safety tandem, you know, knowing that Marcus Williams is out for a while at the very least, as far as not knowing when he's going to be back. It does make you wonder if they can move Hamilton around as much as they would like to, because you are in a position where, you know, you don't want to leave Geno Stone in single high too much. But, you know, for what they did yesterday and what their approach has been against the Bengals, where they're in a lot of two high and they're going to say to Joe Burrow, hey, you're going to have to dink and dunk it all the way down the field, and you have to be efficient doing that, not make mistakes. And, well, he made the mistake, and Geno Stone came away with the interception at the goal line, which was one of the big plays of the game. But, you know, for Kyle Hamilton, you know, I think there's still some improvement to be made. I think he'd be the first to tell you that. But, you know, this is a young player who has all the tools. You know, he's 6'4". You know, again, we've seen him play and thrive closer to the line of scrimmage. So, we'll see how it looks if he is playing more of a deep safety role, which, you know, again, they were in a lot of two high, and you know, so it wasn't necessarily seeing him flying around at the line of scrimmage, even at the snap, as we've seen at times. But you know, he's a player that they have very high expectations for, and to your point, one of many guys who had to step up this past Sunday with the injuries that they had on the back end. And you know, I think you have to come away impressed with how that entire group played in that secondary, knowing that you were without your, you know, at least two of your three best players, and throwing Hamilton in that conversation as far as what I expect him to be in his second year.
How about the Mad Dog, Matt Ibike, trying to make a splash as a Pro Bowler, or that next level of the Brandon Williams school of pretty good, in replacing all of that? A little aggressive, but you notice him. I mean, he is, you know, he's a guy they brought into the program that you don't say they need to go out in the free agent market. And I honestly don't sit around and think about Calais Campbell too. I mean, we're only 2 hours into the season. I haven't thought about that much. The D line's been decent.
Yeah. And again, it's early. I mean, that's the requisite that, you know, at least until we get to October, it's early, right? And then you look up and you say, oh, we're a quarter of the way through the season. But I mean, Justin Madubuike, I mean, the issue for him or this season so far has just been the penalties. I mean, he's got to knock that off. You know, he had three penalties in week one, got fined for a couple of them. And he had another one on Sunday. I mean, you just look at those kinds of penalties. We talked about this a lot several years back with Matthew Judon. As good of a player as he was and continues to be in New England, he was the kind of guy that, for whatever the reason, and it wasn't every week, but it was way too often, he'd have a penalty where you'd just scratch your head and say, why'd you do that, man? I mean, you're better than that. You know, that the kind of penalty where you say that's more of an IQ test than a physical error, you know, where you know, you get called for holding, you get called for pass interference, those types of I mean, that happens. You know, it's football. You know, even
shoving
even,
guys after the plays is just dumb.
I mean, when you're talking about that, or in this day and age, I mean, I know for years we said, well, you get two steps in hitting the quarterback. We know in reality now you really don't even get two steps. You get maybe one, right? I mean, that's just – and it's how it works now. And we can sit here and complain about it and want it to go back to the way it was in 2000 or 1990 or 1975. That's not happening. I mean, the league wants to protect its quarterbacks. So, you know, if you're Justin Madubuike or anyone – trying to get to the quarterback, you have to recognize that and you have to be careful. But to go back to, you know, what Madubuike is, you know, where he wants to be. I mean, this is the kind of guy that is absolutely playing for a massive payday. You know, I thought it was fascinating that the Ravens paid Broderick Washington during training camp, albeit not the kind of money that Madubuike could get on the open market. So, you know, he's playing for a contract, whether it's in Baltimore or somewhere else. So, you know, it's, other than the penalties, he's off to a good start, but he's committed four penalties in 2 weeks. I mean, that's unacceptable. You know, you can't have that. So it really is a case of, you know, he needs to get himself under discipline a little bit more. You know, he needs to play within himself and do what he's capable of doing. He's a very talented football player. No one denies that, but you got to cut out the flags. I mean, that hurts your team, you know, hurts your defense big time. So the Ravens in general, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, I should say, offensively, you know, the offensive line, that was kind of the one blemish. They did have a handful of flags, but defensively, you know, they were able to cut that out. And again, it goes back to what I said. You play a clean brand of football on defense, you can bend and you can bend and you can bend some more, and you're going to make life difficult for Joe Burrow and the Bengals because they have to go extend drives and 14, 15, 16 plays to score a touchdown. They have to convert third downs. They're taking up time. And, oh, yeah, they also know that the Ravens are sustaining drives and taking up time. So it really does limit your possessions in a football game. So you know, you kind of look at how that game played out. I mean, Cincinnati, and they had the punt return in the first half. So, you know, that kind of skews it a little bit. But they had three possessions in the first half, and they had four in the second half. I mean, seven possessions in a football game, not a whole lot. So if you're not sharp, if you're not perfect in what you do, it's going to be really difficult to score points. So, you know, they had 24, but they needed a punt return to do it. So again, it just speaks to the style, the philosophy that the Ravens have had against the Bengals. And it's worked out really well for them against an offense that is very much capable of hanging 40 on you. And we saw them do that against the Ravens 2 years ago, and it's why they shifted their approach.
Our partner, Brian Billick, always had the line about it's a time for pay and a time for play. Now the time's for play. But all of the offseason talk for Dobbins and money and all the oxygen it took up, and he's gone now, and God bless him. Patrick Queen is the guy who just got, you know, jump roped with Roquan Smith in the middle of the year last year. Roquan gets all the money. He sort of knows he's not getting the money. He knew that going in. He had a talk with his creator and his agent and his coaches, and he has been, maybe since Jarrett Johnson, and I go back to Adelis Thomas a little bit, Ed Hartwell, these were all guys who knew by this time in the last year, their walk, that they weren't coming back here, that they literally were playing for 31 other teams in the league. Patrick Queen is clearly that guy. Like, and the better he plays, the more gone he is, because the more gone somebody else is going to give him money that the Ravens won't be able to afford him or keep him around. I mean, Jarrett Johnson, there was a period where, like, maybe, but you should go get paid. We're already there with Patrick Queen, and 2 weeks into this thing, he is he's playing for a contract, and it looks like he's playing for a contract. He looks very, very hungry.
He's been terrific. I mean, as someone who, you know, 3 years ago, even 2 years ago, even early last season, someone who has been critical at times of Patrick Queen. I mean, this is a guy who has gotten better every single season. And with Roquan Smith arriving, and we talked about this last year, we've talked about this over the course of the offseason, Roquan Smith being that force multiplier that reminds you a little bit. I'm not ready to put him in the same breath, but reminds you of the impact that Ray Lewis had at that position because of what you just mentioned. Guys that played next to him, Ed Hartwells, Bart Scott, you know, guys like that who were good players, but were paid like great to be great players somewhere else. And then as it would tend to play out, that other team that paid that guy to be the next Ray Lewis, they would find out that, oh, they're good, but they were better because they were playing next to Ray Lewis. I mean, Patrick Queen's benefiting from that. And let's be clear, I'm not saying that to disparage him. He's playing the best football of his career over these first couple of weeks. There's no question about that. And he played very well on Sunday. Getting back to what I was saying about the approach that the Ravens have taken defensively against the Bengals, that only works if you tackle. And we saw Patrick Queen tackle. Of course, we see Roquan Smith tackle. Geno Stone tackled on a number of occasions on underneath these underneath throws that, you know, you break a tackle and a guy's off and running and you're compromised then. But, you know, Queen has played so well, and it really is a credit to him. And we talked about this over the summer. Everything that Dobbins did, you know, his approach and look, not even getting into the injury, because that, no one deserves that, whether you like a guy, whether you not, whether you agree with his approach or not. No one deserves to go what he's gone through, you know, to go through that from an injury standpoint. But the way that Queen has conducted his business, he's flat out admitted he was ticked that, not that the Ravens paid Roquan Smith, but that they turned down his fifth year option, because he knew that meant, okay, well, I'm not getting my fifth year option, and they're kind of telling me what they think of me at that point in time. The Ravens like Patrick Queen. They like Patrick Queen a lot, but when you have a 50 plus million dollar quarterback, you're not paying two off ball linebackers. You just can't. It would be irresponsible from a cap standpoint to do that. So he's playing for a big payday elsewhere. And to your point, every strong game he has decreases the likelihood of him remaining in Baltimore on some kind of reasonable contract, which I think was probably the only way he's going to be back. But he's putting himself in position for a really nice payday. So, you know, and let's be clear, the Ravens are going to benefit from having him next to Roquan Smith this year. You know, there's no doubt about that. But with Smith being there, they are able to use Patrick Queen in a way that augments his strengths and covers up some of his weaknesses. And he has responded so well. And he's been a total pro about it. Look, he had every right to feel, you know, to not be happy about his fifth year option being picked up. He had every right to, while be happy for Roquan Smith, understand what that meant for him when the Ravens gave Smith a $100 million contract. These guys are human beings. You know, they're not robots. You know, it's not as though they're just puppets that that Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh just manipulate. These guys have feelings. This is their livelihood, after all. So he had every right to feel a little ticked off. But he channeled that in such a positive way, and he was there for OTAs, and he was there for minicamp, and he was healthy throughout the spring and summer, and he's playing the best football of his career. And boy, if you're going to play the best football of your career, you want it to occur in a contract year. And Queen is very much putting himself in good position. But in the meantime, the Ravens love having him next to Roquan Smith, and it really gives them that much of an advantage at that in that portion of the football field. And you know, I think you know, that clearly is one of their biggest strengths, especially right now with them being banged up in the secondary. And you know, Patrick Queen, another strong showing for him on Sunday in Cincinnati.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke out on the social media places. And you can find me out on social media all week as well. You can also find us at Coco's. We're going to be giving away the Raven scratch-offs. I have them. They're fresh. They're big cards. Hopefully, they're lucky cards. We're going to be at Coco's from 2 until 5 doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this week. Also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 86690Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube. I'm wearing my Drug City shirt here since 1954. Picked up some candy and some liquor. It was, you know, quicker over the weekend. Got a little tequila going down at Drug City, the liquor store there. We're going to be at the Fountain for my birthday next month doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. At Coco's this week with Rasig, as well as my dear friend John Morgan. It's been a little while for John Morgan. He'll be coming on talking about the Raven Stadium and the Orioles Stadium and playoff madness here. We have playoff fever with the Orioles and first place fever with the Ravens. About as good a week around here as we've had in quite... If just Kicks told me they're coming back and playing one more show at Hammerjacks on New Year's Eve, it would fix everything. I don't think that's happening, but quite a week. Big appreciation to everybody who has said hello at the Nest or at the Orioles games or anywhere at Merriweather, anywhere we've been out in the community. It's just been out and about. I was at Costas, excuse me, the other day as well, ordering some carry out there, and the city's getting a little orange mixed with a little bit of purple. Luke will be up late watching Orioles games from Houston this week and then on to Cleveland through the weekend, as well as being out in Owings Mills. Follow him. If there's any breaking news, you'll get that first on the WNST Tech Service. That is all brought to you by Coons Baltimore Ford. Dennis will be here on Thursday driving you home from 3 until 5. It's a sports time. The weather's changing. The leaves are changing. And we're about to have playoff baseball and hang the bunting at Camden Yards. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Ravens except to talk a little Orioles and Baltimore positive.